Welcome to the Freddie Mac Single Family Home Starts Here podcast, your connection to all the latest industry trends, insights, and points of view on the mortgage market from Freddie Mac leaders and other industry experts.
Welcome to the Freddie Mac Single Family Home Starts Here podcast. In 2018, Freddie Mac launched its hashtag Leading the Way initiative to champion the advancement of women across the finance and mortgage industries. We do this mainly by leveraging research and subject matter expertise, education and insights, and our deep industry partnerships. We understand that as an industry, we must be intentional in how we address removing barriers and creating solutions. Through open and candid dialogue with women in leadership, we explore issues such as the importance of mentors or allies who can help facilitate women's career growth. On this episode of Home Starts Here, we revisit a conversation between two dynamic women, Barbara Corcoran, founder of the Corcoran Group and shark on ABC's hit show Shark Tank, and executive vice president and head of Freddie Mac's single family, Donna Corley. Barbara sat down with Donna during the fall 2020 annual Single Family Connect conference. She shared personal stories about her career growth and practical advice on honing your entrepreneurial spirit, regardless of where you are in your career journey. I really enjoyed this conversation, and we hope you do as well. We're pleased to share it with you, our listeners, and we hope that you'll pass it on to your friends and colleagues. Enjoy.
Hello, and thank you for joining me. I'm Donna Corley, head of the single family business at Freddie Mac, and I'm the first woman to have this role in our 50-year history. And I'm joining great company, both our chair of the board and our head of our multifamily business are women. You know, the goal of hashtag Leading the Way campaign is to help create meaningful conversations within the mortgage industry about the need to help women advance in their careers. It's a platform where we ask women in leadership positions to share their stories and encourage those coming up behind them to keep reaching for their dreams. You know, looking back on my own path, I now recognize that I changed jobs early in my career to be in areas where there were strong female role models. Subconsciously, I think I found it easier to visualize myself in that next role when someone I could relate to had that position. And so that's why I am passionate about spotlighting women who are excelling in various different positions. You know, I want our next generation of leaders to hear from them, learn from them, and see what is possible. And I also want our allies to hear those stories. Having male leaders understand the challenges we face and what they can do to help support their female colleagues is vital. So that is why I am also incredibly grateful that I found a wonderful role model to be able to be with us today. Barbara Corcoran is an author, an entrepreneur, and a renowned Shark Tank shark. Welcome, Barbara. Thank you for being here. And I am thrilled that you're joining this conversation.
My pleasure, Donna, truly.
I mean, Barbara, you've had such a distinguished career, from motivational speaker to small business entrepreneur, all the way to a real estate mogul. And of course, for the past 10 seasons, ABC's Shark Tank shark. You've done it all and you make it all look so incredibly easy, but I'm sure that's not always been the case. Give us a sense of what it was like in the beginning when you started out.
Donna, you're right. It's never the case. When you look at success, people see that. They don't see the struggles that got the person in the successful position. I had a huge advantage starting out in my career because I had nowhere to go but up and nothing to lose. And you know, I came from a lower middle class family with 10 kids, one bathroom, etc. And coming from that position, having held 22 jobs by the time I was 23, was a huge advantage. I may have looked like a young kid, but I was not. I was very well experienced. I got a lucky break in my 22nd job, which was as a diner waitress. And I was behind the counter one night and my first boyfriend walked in. I didn't know he was my boyfriend at sight. But when he walked in, he became my mentor. He was 10 years older than me. He told me a smart girl like I should be in the real estate business. He said, you'd be great in sales. And he offered to loan me $1,000 to get a business started. If that wasn't a lucky break, what was a lucky break? And at that time, when I entered the business, the industry was worked by women in New York City, but it was entirely owned by men. And that was the huge challenge. But I had the advantage of being too stupid to know any better. And I had the second advantage somehow on day one, seeing myself as the queen of New York real estate, as clear as it actually existed. And then 22 years later, I would sell my business for $66 million as the queen of New York real estate. And so I think the break and the vision was so essential to me entering a male-dominated business and redefining it and succeeding.
That is amazing. And maybe it was that fighting for that bathroom space that really got you that that early drive that you needed. You know, you're quoted as saying that all your best successes come on the heels of failure, and that every failure has equally big upside if you're willing to stay in the game. So have you always been that optimistic, or is that something that you learned over your career?
Well, I learned how to fail in school because I was a terrible student. I couldn't learn to read or write till I was in seventh grade. And so I got very comfortable with the position of being an outsider, the kid that didn't fit in, the kid that didn't want to be seen reading or heard reading because I couldn't do it. And when you spend enough years in any setting, I think, as the loser, so to speak, you get accustomed to being a loser. So I was pretty comfortable with failing. And when I went into the business world, in fact, any of my very part-time jobs that I had since the time I was 11, I was pretty much made for failing. It was no big deal, but I was better working than I was in school. So anything seemed better than that. You know, it was like one long sentence in a jail cell for me going right through school. I couldn't wait to get out. So having that background that at the time seemed like the worst thing to happen to a kid, I now see as a grown up, was the best thing to happen to me because I got comfortable there. When I gave my first speech, which was like 2 years into my business, I couldn't believe I'd being asked to give a speech. And nonetheless, to a respectable group of bankers at Citibank, I was like, wow. And I was so scared because it was in the area I wasn't good at, preparing and performing in a setting like that. And so I lost my voice, of course. I don't know why I was surprised.
Oh, no.
Can I tell you? No big deal. Everybody knows one of the hardest things in the world is to do public speaking. I just thought if I had prepared for 500 hours, I would probably be good at it, and I wasn't. But again, I think I took that hit pretty hard, but pretty fast. And so, oh boy, once I got over my embarrassment, I figured I had to find a way to get comfortable if I was going to have a voice in the industry. I saw that very clearly. And so I put a like a menu of topics together for NYU Learning Annex, which is for adults at night. And I offered to teach for 10 weeks as a teacher on how to sell real estate, which I knew how to do at that point already. And that became my forum for practice, and I learned how to speak. When I, years later, spent my first big profit of $77,000 on this great idea to put all the properties in New York on videotape, so the customers didn't even have to see an apartment. They could just buy it in their lazy boy chair at home. I thought this was the greatest thing ever, and of course, it failed miserably. But on the heels of that failure, I threw all those videotapes on a new thing the government had called the internet. Didn't know what to expect. And I had 2 sales in 1 week. Bah, boom. And then I registered all my competitors' URLs so I'd know when they woke up, which was 2 years later. But it was about to change the real estate industry. You know, over all the years in business, I have learned if there's crap happening, you can bet your bottom dollar there's opportunity right around the edge. And that's why I say you just have to stay in the game. Because even today, in such terrifically challenging times for all business and all workers, I just know I'm diligently trying to take advantage because I know the worse the problems are, the better the opportunity. It's like bouncing a ball. Hit it harder, it bounces high. Hit it soft, it bounces so high. The harder the hit, the better the opportunity. So I totally, totally believe in that. If you don't mind, I would like to, it's not exactly a question, but it came to my head, so I got to get it out. I'm one of those. I think a lot of people think that someone who's very successful got their confidence through success. I believe that's one of the greatest falsehoods out there. I have found working with so many entrepreneurs, knowing myself and my struggles, I have learned that your confidence is gotten by trying. When you don't try, you know you failed, you know you're hiding out. If you think you're going to reach for something and you just don't want to do it, you take your confidence a notch down. I have tried so many things and succeeded at very few, but I didn't get my confidence out of succeeding. I got my confidence every time by the effort and the bravery that I felt proud about myself just trying. And then if you do enough tries, you're going to get a percentage of your stuff that works out. And so I just think it's a misnomer. I just want to straighten out. Success comes and confidence comes with the trying, whereas most people focus on, I don't want to do it. It's not going to work. It might not work. It has nothing to do with the whole game, you know?
You know, that's a great point. And it's powerful, right? I mean, if you think of the times in your life when you've been the most proud, it's for achieving something that was incredibly challenging and difficult. It's not something easy. And so it probably was something that you weren't necessarily confident going in, that this is going to be a no-brainer. So what, I mean, maybe, and obviously you just touched on a couple, but maybe give some a sense of skills that you think it takes to really be successful. And I'm curious to know, do you think those skills are any different for men versus women?
I think what men and women need to be, if they're going to be successful in any position they have, is extreme dedication and focus. If you don't have the work ethic to really push the pedal to the metal 24/7, make it your hyper focus in life, I'm going to get there, I'm going to get there, that kind of thing, you're not going to get anywhere. I mean, you'll get somewhere, whatever you're focused on, but you're not going to get to the top of your field. And I don't care if that's a man or a woman, or it's a private corporation, a big corporation, entrepreneurship, you have to have that as a starter, your ticket to enter the race, so to speak. I should also say that I think women more harshly judge themselves in every category. And they look at the categories of their lives as separate in a way, even though they're not. They need to be blended and they fight one another. But if we are proud of ourselves as women, we want to be the super mom. We want to be the super wife. We want to be the super business person when you're at work, and you want to be a super leader. But men will kind of blend that somehow. Oh, they'll be a good boss when they get home. They'll be a good dad. Women want it all. And because they really feel the obligation to be that person to everyone around them. And so I think women can be too harsh in their own judgment of themselves. And I say that because I know I am, without a doubt. I think also women, differently than men, there's not many differences, but I'll cite for you what I believe are the main differences. Women take on more than men overall. And also women don't take credit as easily. I like to think that men will climb a mountain, get halfway up, and pound their chests and say they're declaring themselves the king of the mountain. Women climb the mountain, get all the way to the top, set up the tents, make sure dinner's on the table, make sure it looks good. And then they share the credit with everybody who helped them get there. Little different MO. You know? And then also I can tell you, I've employed thousands of people my whole life. And I could tell you women don't ask for raises for the most part. And in a business environment, men get up and ask for a raise long before they do for the most part. And that women don't ask for raises, they're dependent on a boss that adores them and sees that they merit the raises and initiates it. But there's a real difference in working with women in the workplace in that regard. I learned also myself, and I struggled with it because I was raised by a mom who really only wanted her 10 kids to be nice people. That's all she asked of us, just be nice to people. And we are all nice people. But she didn't teach us to pound our chests and take credit and speak up. And I had to learn that in New York City as a young woman at 23. I had to learn that if you please everybody, you get nothing for yourself. I had to learn that the person who didn't take credit early for what they were doing got no credit. And so I had to teach myself in many business circumstances to say, what would a man do? And I raised my hand. What would a man do? Speak louder. What would a man do? Take full credit when it wasn't his. And so I had to like rewire a good portion of my personality to succeed in business. And that was enormously helpful to me. And I think I went too long on your question, Donna.
No, so, this is phenomenal. I could listen to you all day. So, you know, but you touched on so many things that I don't even know where to start to follow up. But I mean, one, I will say, you noticed what you needed to do different and were able to identify it and change your behavior. That's not easy for everybody. And part of that is why I'm encouraging all the, you know, our male colleagues listening and all these allies to say, recognize that we are different in these ways, and also help, you know, draw us out and recognize these differences. Are there any other tips that you can give women too, to say, how do we overcome these challenges? How do we stand up and address some of these issues that are so embedded in our upbringing?
One is practice, like anything else. You're not good at baseball, you start swinging your bat a lot, you're going to get better, right? Two thoughts came to my mind. One, a lesson I only learned, or so perfectly put and empowering, when I was watching Warren Buffett give some kind of graduation speech, listen to this. I wish I could say I did it. I didn't. But I thought, boy, can people learn from that. He said that when he was a young man at 18 or 19, he didn't have a good role model around him. And he really very much had a burning desire to be successful. So he said when he was in his late teenage years, he started reading about, watching, seeing people in his home area, people he admired in books and outside of books in real life. And he made a list of the traits that he admired in each of those people. And he said he decided at that point, right then and there, he was going to rewire himself because he felt he had maybe one or two of the seven or eight traits he cited. And he said he was decided right then and there he was going to rewire himself and he was going to become those traits. And he gives himself credit for becoming every one of those traits. I thought, wow, how's that for taking things in your hand and being empowered, you know? But what does that take? It takes self-assessment. I believe the best way to start patting yourself on the back is by sitting down and really making a list of what you're good at. I've managed so many people, promoted people, seen tremendous success stories so far, and I hope to see so many more. But I would say if there's one thing everyone knows is what they're good at and they drop what they're not good at. You know, we're taught to be good at everything. People are not. And the most successful people who build around their strengths are the most successful people. You don't need it a lot. I can't read or write well, but I sure can talk. And I made a living talking. And I think that's very empowering. So I think even starting by sitting down and making a list of what you're good at and asking yourself of what you're spending your career doing is dependent on those gifts. If it's not, you're in the wrong field.
You know, that's amazing. And I think a lot of times I've made the comment of, well, I want to leverage my strengths and hire people that have my weaknesses. So that way, together as a team, we are much stronger. And for those more junior in your career, you may not be able to hire a big team, but find your colleagues that are complementary to you and, you know, divide up the work accordingly and give each other pointers and tips and help. So it sounds like, yeah, you've absolutely leveraged that same skill. It's great.
And you're sending the right message without a doubt. Yeah.
Yeah. And when I think of, I love your story about Warren Buffett as well. I've always said I've learned something from every manager that I've ever had. Some things I want to emulate and some things I never want to do.
I think ironically, a bad boss teaches you more how to be a good boss than a good boss. Because
it may
every
be.
Bad boss I had, I made sure I wasn't anything like that. And so I see it as like, oh, I got a new course I'm taking for the next 6 months. on what not to do when I become a boss. Yeah.
No, and you know, and early in my career, I had one manager. I mean, it was over 10 years. He was constantly pushing me outside my comfort zone, having me take on new opportunities, broaden my experience. It was just a phenomenal mentor in that regard. I had this other woman, a very senior leader, who just over the course of one lunch hour, gave me advice. And this was when I was I had a newborn at home, right? So I was going back to the workforce and gave me advice that I still reflect on today. And so, you know, maybe much like Warren Buffett looking for people that inspire him, I want to hear from you. Who have been the people that you've admired in your career? And, you know, what aspects of them is what, you know, what did you admire and what were you trying to emulate?
Number one, I had my mother. And all my siblings say I'm a dead ringer for my mother. They don't mean by looks, by personality. My mother inspired me and still does to this day. I often say, what would mom say? What would mom do? And then I try to do exactly what she would do. She had an amazing gift of underlining the positive in every one of her children. And we all had our issues of this or that, you know? So when I went home crying at school because the nun from hell told me I'd be stupid if I couldn't learn how to read or write. My mom said, don't worry about it. You have a wonderful imagination, Barbara Ann, and with it, you learn to fill in all the blanks. That's the way she saw it. I said, whoa, I do. And she would put me in that role of demonstrating my wonderful imagination. And to this day, what do I have? I'm a great marketer. What does marketing take? Imagination. I'm great at it. I'm not sure I had that as a gift, but my mother convinced me I did. And she did that with all of her 10 kids, her other nine. Okay. So she was overall for life a tremendous inspiration in how to see the gift in people, which I'm very good at, how to build on the gift, which she was very good at, and how to overlook what's wrong you know, not to be critical or write people off too fast, you see? And so that all I got from my mom. So I had my own kind of MBA walking into the business world, really. I also had a developer, a big guy in the business, a big tough guy, one of the biggest builders in the business named Bernie Mendick, who taught me very early on the power of a compliment to raise people. He had 88 apartments, a big guy. He wasn't going to bankrupt him, but he had 88 apartments that were the dogs of the industry. He couldn't sell with an insurance company and asked me to put a plan together to sell them. Everybody knew they were not sellable. They were just not sellable. And I told him that after really examining and putting my thinking cap on the best I could, he said, "Oh, Barbara, you're a smart girl. You'll figure it out." And he sent me away. I'm like, "What? As the biggest guy in the field, like a god." And he told me, "I'm a smart girl. I'll figure it out." What do you think happened? I figured it out. I priced them all alike because I mimicked a puppy sale where there weren't enough apartments to go around. I had a secret sale and I had 200 people gobble those apartments up in 2 weeks, and I made over $2 million. Yeah. So a compliment, voicing a compliment, your confidence in someone is amazingly powerful. And you don't have to be a boss to do that. You could be a colleague. Watch what people do when they see what you see in them for the better. I think you need someone very often, we all do, need someone to point out our strengths, you know? Mm-hmm. And then last, as weird as it is, I should not overlook telling you, I think insult can be one of the most powerful motivators in the world. Most of my most successful entrepreneurs that I got behind on Shark Tank have been motivated by something that went wrong in life, something they're getting around, dad that damned them to hell or wasn't there for them. They are insulted and they come back by force. I know when I was leaving my first boyfriend and business partner, Ramon Simone, because he ran off with my secretary, I'm like, of course, I'm going to end this business. His parting words were, as I walked out the door with my seven people, he said, "You know, you'll never succeed without me." Whoa, he gave me the gift of a lifetime, an insurance policy for success. I remember over the next 20 some odd years being down and out, over leveraged, not knowing how I was going to stay in business. And I would think of those words and I'd think of one more angle. And that would be it. Get me over the hump and keep me in business. So I believe in people motivating in a negative way, but if somebody really insults your core, they can do you a favor. They can bring out the best in you. It has certainly happened to me on a couple of accounts. Oh, yeah, watch me. Oh, yeah, watch me. I can distinctly remember in the real estate business having the big boy, the old boy network talk down to me, like talk to each other, oh, hello, and dismiss me. I would say every time, "I'm going to get you." It's vicious, I know, but that insult right up my alley.
Well, it seems like, you know, as you're obviously dealing with resiliency when things are down, it sounds like there's a couple things that get you through, right? It's either the compliments and the confidence that, hey, you can go at it, or it's that competitive spirit that someone is literally, you know, lighting that fire and, yeah, be damned, you lose, right? So I love it. I love it.
If I could add one other thing to that list, because I think it damages so many people, particularly women, it's the tape that runs in your head. You know, it took me probably a good 10 years to get over a negative tape that went in my head, which only came from being a lousy student. So I'd be in a business circumstance and have to speak up. And I'd be right back in third grade with kids laughing at my reading. Someone not believing me because I was afraid. And that tape in my head would say something like, "You better lay low here. You don't have to speak up. Just lay low. You'll have your chance. Da, da, da." All that negative tape that was garbage from behind, you know, it took me many years to replace that tape with, "Wow, you're the greatest. You're amazing. You're gorgeous." And that tape is gone. But let me tell you, it was probably the hardest battle that I had to really fight to find my success, because it rears its ugly head when you least want it, when you're most insecure and your confidence at its low. So it's a killer. You gotta replace your tape. Many of us have it.
You're dead on. I mean, that I'm so glad you brought that up. And I'm glad that you lost that tape. So thank you for that. You have been exposed to so many different organizations, different companies, you know, obviously investing in so many. I'm curious, have you seen difference in those that really like get gender barriers and how to address them and have work cultures that are designed to be much more accommodating, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. You're talking about what a culture in a corporation might be, you mean?
Yeah. Like, is there a type of culture that really helps women in making sure that they are growing and developing? And are there certain traits that we should be trying to make sure our companies embed within their culture to be successful like this?
Well, number one, exactly what you're doing, Donna, you are having an open forum, addressing issues and being all inclusive and reaching out to give education is a phenomenal way to get started. Okay. So without that, you're not setting the tone of your corporation right. So you've already got that leg up. I think having networking events that don't take place on the golf course to hit a particularly female sweet spot. Where do they want to eat? Where do they want to meet? What do they want to talk about to bring them together? But most things are male still, and the larger the corporation, the more male dominant it is. So I think even sizing that up and thinking, how do we meet women, and not just women, any minority group, where they want to meet is very important for a company to analyze. I think modernizing policies that create work-life balance is essential. I don't think it's an extra anymore. I know companies that it's perfectly not only acceptable, but admired and put a policy in place to let moms go see their kids play soccer at 3 o'clock. I mean, you want to endear someone to the parent company. That's how you do it. And not just like sneaking out the back or assuming that you're going to miss those games. No, we want you to be a great parent. Get out there and watch your kids go home early and play soccer. Anything in that arena is useful. And then I think you alluded to it very early on, Donna, in your first introduction, and wisely so, that seeing women in the position of power, you know, people will mimic what they see, not what they're told. Just like children, you could, for the parents out there, you could talk yourself blue about what your kids should be, but in the end, they're going to be like you. And so if you see women in a position of power, whether it be the head of a department, the head of even a committee, the head of a board, you're going to identify with those women, and you make it much easier for women to emulate that. And one other thing, and then I'll end my list because I know it's getting lengthy. I think an open communication with your people as to what can we help you with lately? I find, and I have found my entire life, people that work for you will tell you exactly what they need if you're willing to listen. Hey, how can we help you? How can we help you? As though there were no policies in place. And people will tell you if you're willing to listen. So I think that kind of open communication where every voice is equal, not just management voices. I can tell you, I built my business and had phenomenal managers that I pulled from the sales ranks over time. But I rarely got a great idea from a manager, ironically. All my great ideas came from my receptionist, my salespeople, a bookkeeper with a creative marketing idea, you know, but I had that open forum where all the ideas flushed out and I heard them all. And I think that puts any company in a very good stead for having the characteristics of a work culture that got it right, as you put it, got it right. Yes, definitely.
That's great. And I think any culture where anyone's allowed to speak up, share ideas, that's when you really get to farm, right, the best of the best and leverage them. So I do think that's so vital. Are there any tips that you can give or any of our gentlemen that are watching this and saying, all right, what can they be doing to help support, you know, women and minorities in the workplace and helping us as we continue to grow in our careers?
Sure. Most of it rests on attitude. What the best news is, and what has definitely changed in the workplace, is men have daughters. And believe me, the men who have the daughters, I have found to be the best mentors, because they see in a young woman their own daughter who's getting out of school in 3 years, you know, and they have a different attitude toward women and what they can accomplish. Men with very powerful wives make great mentors, make great bosses, I find. I know I'm stereotyping, but I think there's truth in what I say. And I think men, of course, promoting women to lead, making sure they're visible, even if they're in a starter capacity in some way, putting them as a project head, asking them to come back and say how they're doing and share it with other women, will make women early on identify with being in a leadership role. I think also allowing flexible work and trusting that the workers, this just doesn't have to be female, of course, could be anyone, have a good work ethic. I have in my company, my media company, and I had it at the Corcoran Group all those years, and I push it with all the entrepreneur businesses that I invest in, of not having a vacation policy. And what do you think happens when you don't have a vacation policy and you don't have work hours and you push people out the door early when you've come through a stretch of hard work, or give them 3 days off and they're like, don't come in Monday and Tuesday? What do you think happens to workers when you give them that kind of freedom? Even in a large corporate setting, which is not what most people would identify that with, they work harder. I could tell you, if I clocked the number of hours the people in my company were working in any given week, it's not 40 hours, it's probably 60, but we have no hours as long as the job gets done. So allowing freedom and trust brings out the best in every trustworthy person in your organization, trusting that that happens. You know, it's interesting what's happened in this pandemic. My workforce worked from home. And now what do you want to do? They don't want to come back to work. They may want to come in one day every couple of weeks to see each other. No problem. But it was interesting what I learned about myself. I thought I trusted everyone implicitly. And you know what? I was a little worried that they're not coming to work. What's going to happen with the workload? We can't slow down. We got to push out. Nobody slowed down. So I've learned to trust more. The pandemic has taught so many bosses that they can trust, because people aren't going to come back to work the way they used to. And so all of these things are useful to not only male colleagues, but anybody who's in a position where they can influence the corporate culture. Definitely.
You know, I'm glad you brought up the pandemic, because that has been, I think it's been a game changer for women and for so many who have wanted to have more of the flexible work arrangements. And clearly we've all needed to be working in that type of environment. Granted, we also then have the added complication of, you know, kids in school, at home, so thus in our workplace. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, post this, how much more open companies will be to more permanent, flexible schedules and what that could do for women going forward. So I think there's a lot of upside there as well.
If you ask any woman, and men too, but particularly women with children at any age, what is the most important and cherished characteristic of a job? It's flexibility. I mean, if the corporations don't really listen hard to what people now want, how can we really help you? They're crazy. It's a one-time opportunity. And everything will be rewritten, but it's the companies who listen hard who are going to come out on top.
No, that's exactly right. It's a two-way street and it's magical when it happens. Let me ask you this. You know, obviously, you're an amazing role model. How do you pay it forward for that next generation?
I surround myself with very good people and help them build who they think they are. And most people have no idea how far they could go. So I build people more than I build business. You know, well, I shouldn't say that. If you build people, you build your business. That's the way it goes. I try very hard to be genuinely myself, open, very open with my own insecurities. I try not to do falsehoods. I don't mean bullshitting, that's part of my field. I'm fine with that. I'm talking about being false. I think what I try to do very hard is to be someone who somebody wants to mimic and who can mimic. You know, there's no big magic in being successful. It takes a lot of different things, and success is different to so many different people.
For being vulnerable, I think, is actually the greatest sign of courage and strength. And so, and letting people see where you have those weaknesses, again, that's all of a sudden that they can say, wait a minute, I can relate to that person. And again, I think it opens up the door for so many more people than some Superman character that, you know, everyone's using as a yardstick.
Supermen are only in the comic books, right?
Exactly right. Barbara, thank you so much for your time. Are there any other words of wisdom that you can shed on us before we run out of time?
Yeah, you know what? Well, I don't know if it's words of wisdom, but I think an overlaying blanket that's over all of us right now is the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And it's tough. I think of myself as one of the happiest people I've ever met. I don't really have a bad day. I have bad moments, but I don't have a bad day. I'm fairly happy by nature. But I almost feel like since March, I've been slightly depressed, which I never thought anybody could make me feel like a little wet blanket is on me all the time, like running at 75% versus 110, which I like to. And I've really had to struggle with that. You know what I've been doing lately? Giving myself a break. you know, especially with women, drive yourself so hard, so much right now. And the overlaying context of everything is pretty negative. But fortunately, I'm old and I've lived through a lot, a lot of stuff where the sky was falling. So even though I feel it much like we are all feeling it, I really know that, hey, we're coming around this corner soon. And I've been making plans for everything I'm going to do when the sun's out. And I'm going to do them. So I have the longest laundry list on my refrigerator, and it doesn't include groceries. And I think that's not a bad thing to do mentally for yourself. Yeah, but about giving yourself a break, that's what I want to do. I mean, I think we need a softer gaze on ourselves, very much so. But it too shall pass, as they say, you know? Yeah.
And it can't happen soon enough. But, you know, but it also connects to your prior comment. I mean, everyone has a different definition of success. And I always like to think at any point in your life, you need to have a different definition of success. And so right now in the pandemic, there's a different one than, you know, when I was a mom with newborn, I had a very different success than, you know, now where I am in my career. And I think sometimes women forget that that can change and evolve. And you, just because you picked one track early on doesn't mean you have to stay there. Like you said, this too shall pass, and let's keep making ourselves stronger and getting ready to truly shine when this is done.
I want to say women have a huge advantage, I feel, by nature, because they self-reflect more. They say, hey, is this worth it? Hey, should I change? Women have an advantage there. And with the time on our hands, that we really have a chance to pause and check our direction. Definitely. I would agree with you, Donna. I guess that's my way of saying you are correct.
Well, thank you. Thanks for helping us with our hashtag leading the way goal of creating meaningful dialogue on such an important conversation about helping women in their careers. I thank you from the bottom of my heart. Everyone, please enjoy the rest of the day. Take care.
My pleasure, Donna.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Freddie Mac Single Family Home Starts Here podcast. Stay tuned and subscribe to catch additional interviews with key industry leaders and experts. Home Starts Here is available wherever you listen to your podcasts. We appreciate you rating, reviewing, and sharing with your network.